All right. I would like to start with introductions so you know who's talking at you. And we will start in just a minute with Cindy. I think I'll start with myself. My name is Yvonne Williams. I think I'm qualified to speak to you today because I have been in the pregnancy center movement for 41 years. That's a long time. I want you to know I think I've made every mistake that you can make in a pregnancy center, which brings my qualifications to you. I've been there, done that, recovered from it. I specialize in board development and training and director training, and CareNet wants the best for your center. We're available to go into your center and individualize a consultation for you as a board. I also am a campus specialist. If you want to start a pregnancy center satellite on your local campus, I am your gal. The more liberal, the better. And these years of working with the board, I bring you a lot of knowledge, expertise, and my part of the presentation will be, what does the IRS want from you, and how do we give it to them? Also, what does the Department of Labor want from you and the other rules and regulations needed and what the bad guys are looking for us? So that'll be my part. Cindy, as Vice President of CareNet, will be introducing herself, and she will be bringing the expertise on evaluating your director and some statistical information. And Saul is our vision man. And I will let him introduce himself, but he has spent 2 years preparing for you today, day and night.
Cindy, would you introduce?
Yeah, can you all hear me? You can hear me good in the back? I have the thing on, so okay. I apologize for the confusion. We were prepared last night. We came in, had all the handouts on the tables, prayed over the room, had everything organized, and when we came in this morning, the room was empty. And the handouts were on the podium. And they put the tables back in. This whole area was full of tables. So I apologize for the confusion, but I think we've done good regrouping, and there's still some people waiting to see. Show me a hands if you do not have the handouts. So there's a handful of you, and I will make a point of getting those printed at lunch, and you'll be able to follow along, do the best you can. Maybe you can share. I apologize that I can't get those immediately, but I will get them to you. So again, I'm Cindy Hopkins. I have a mouthful of a title. I am the Vice President of Center Services and Client Care. And I always say center slowly because one time someone thought I said center services.
Oh, that would be me.
So center services and client care. I oversee the program part of CareNet, the affiliation side of it, even the conference side, our latest initiative, our church outreach. And then we also have, can you not hear me? You can't hear me? Okay, let's see if I can get it closer. We also have an on-site call center at CareNet that falls under my department. I have been with, is that better? Is that better? I wonder if I just put it on my t-shirt right here. Is that good? You want to come up front, sir? It might be. Is there a seat? Maybe right. Oh, okay. Okay, I'll try to talk louder. How's that? Okay. I've been with CareNet 10 years, 10 years and 5 months. Before I was with CareNet, I was with a CareNet center. I was part of a pregnancy center in Ogden, Utah for about 10 years in different capacities. I started out as a peer counselor, and then I was on the board for many years, and eventually I ended up as the executive director. And when I moved to Virginia in 2004, I worked for a pregnancy center there as the director of outreach and left that center to come on staff with CareNet. And again, that was 10 years ago. So So I've worked with a lot of boards over the years. I have actually been a board member, so I've been in your shoes, and I hope that the experience that I have, I'll be able to share, and you guys will be able to learn and glean. My background, I have a bachelor's degree in business and administration, and most recently, in fact, as recently as last May, I completed my master's degree in organizational leadership from Regent University. And Regent is a strategic partner of CareNet, and they allow us as employees of CareNet itself and also CareNet affiliates a 25% discount in tuition. So I took advantage of that opportunity. So I think that's about all I need to say. I have a family. I want to talk about my family. Wait a minute. been married to my husband for 37 years. We have 3 grown children, and my daughter is married, and she gave me my first grandchild last July, a year ago July. And if you want to see pictures, I
okay. Get that picture out.
Yeah.
Well, good morning. My name is Saul Pichon. I am a Spanish, Greek, Jewish, Christian, y'all.
Y'all.
Amen? Man, I come from a Jewish background. Both my parents are Holocaust survivors. My mother's still alive and still feisty at 91. I came to know the Lord at 36, and you get a Jew on fire for Jesus, it's all over. I'm just trying to make up for the first 36 years I didn't know him. In fact, I didn't even know he was Jewish. I thought Jesus was Christian. Think about that. Okay, no one witnessed to me. So, been part of the pro-life movement for a number of years. I was in private practice as a Christian psychotherapist for a few years, and my wife and I always supported the local pregnancy center. And long story short, here I've been with that local pregnancy center for 17 years. And it has been a ride, a wonderful ride, a tough ride. And you all know it. Most of you are board members. Some of you are on staff. And to be a part of the pro-life movement is a calling, isn't it? So there's a lot that we've got to share this morning. Buckle up and just take it all in. And that goes both ways. We're going to learn from you, and we'll learn from each other, and we're going to allow the Holy Spirit to lead. Amen? Thank you for being here.
Saul, will you open us in prayer?
Did you?
I'm sorry. Of course you did. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Where I was, right? I think I was talking to Kay. Sorry about that. Lord, bless me. just a little housekeeping. We will break at 12:30 and until 2, but Saul and Yvonne are going to actually eat their lunch in this room, so you are all welcome to go grab a lunch and come back and spend time that hour and a half together. So just so you kind of plan for that, if that's something you'd like to do, a working lunch. They have so much material to share, and they are just wells of wisdom, so I want you to take advantage as much as you can. I'll have to step out after I present this morning, but I'll be around, and I think my email address, well, it's not up there, but it's chopkins@care-net.org if anybody wants to contact me. So what I'm going to talk about this morning, let me start over. Let me ask first a show of hands. Are there any executive directors in the room? So there's about three or four. Okay, and executive directors are part of the board. They're usually an ex officio member of the board, non-voting member of the board, so they're always welcome at a board training, of course. How many board chairmen or chairs are in the board in the room? Okay, and then how many just board members of some capacity or other? And is there anything else, anybody else in the room that wasn't a board member or an ED?
In training.
In training for what? For board training? Okay. Yeah, okay. And how many have been on the board for 5 years or more? Okay. Mm. How many have been on the board for less than a year? Okay. How many have been on the board for less than half a year?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So there's a few newbies. Anybody on the board more than 5 years? Okay, more than 10 years. Okay, so we kind of get a feel of the kind of in the mid-range, maybe 3 to 5 years is average. Okay, now here's the question I want to ask. How many of you have evaluated your executive leader, your executive director, CEO, in the last 12 months? Okay, maybe a quarter of you. So I'm guessing that the rest of you haven't done that in the last 12 months. How many of you have never evaluated, as a board, have never evaluated your executive director? Okay, so quite a few. And of you executive directors, how many of you are evaluated every year? Maybe kind of like a show, maybe a little one. She's not sure. Okay. Well, I'm going to talk to you about evaluating your executive director. And hopefully, if there's questions that you're unanswered about what that looks like and why we do it, I'll be able to answer the questions for you. So the fun thing about the presentation that I'm going to share with you is actually my thesis paper that I wrote for my master's degree last year. I knew that I had to write a paper. They called it a culminating experience of everything I had learned during the years in my program and put it together in as a paper, a project. And I knew I wanted to pick something that blessed the pregnancy center movement. And I knew just from being in the movement long enough and being at CareNet and talking to directors and board members over the years, I had this sense that evaluating executive directors was something that seemed foreign to a lot of people. I heard from directors that they had never been evaluated. I've heard from boards that they don't understand it. So it was kind of just this hunch that I had. So I set out in my research and my paper to understand what was really going on in our network. So this is what I did. I did a questionnaire. Anybody in here take that questionnaire? Remember? No, okay. Oh, one person. I sent a questionnaire out to all of the board members in our database that we had in our CareNet database that were CareNet board members, and I asked them a series of questions, and I did a similar but different survey to the executive directors, trying to understand what the climate was in our network as far as evaluations. And the good part of the research, I got a really good sample. So anything over around 25 to 30% is considered a viable sample. So I did okay with what I got. So, and what I set out to prove in my questionnaire were my hunches, my hypothesis. And my hypothesis, my hunches were that executive directors at CareNet Pregnancy Centers aren't receiving annual evaluations from their boards of directors, and that they are unclear about what their boards... Oh, I'm sorry, I got the wrong... I'm sorry. Did I go... Okay. All right, let me back up. The roadmap of my study, which you all should have on your table, too, and you can read it later, is really about where we are now, which I'm about to share, where we want to go, how do we get there, and how to keep moving. Okay. Oh, okay, here. Would you mind taking it to someone in the back? That would be great. Thank you. And I'll get more. Okay, so let me start back up. So my hunches, my hypothesis that I wanted to prove with the research I was doing is that pregnancy center directors aren't receiving annual evaluations, and also that they're unclear about what their boards expect of them in the area of responsibilities and performance. And that's just after listening to the hearts and stories of directors over the years, that was a hunch I had. And then also that board members at CareNet centers are unaware of the processes of evaluating their chief executive officer, and they're unaware, they're unfamiliar. So I set out to prove those hunches with my research. And what I found, and the results are here, were that 73% of board members report that the ED is evaluated annually, but only 64% of directors report being evaluated annually. And we'll talk about the discrepancies. But the bottom line is there's a big chunk of directors that aren't being evaluated on a regular basis. And I also found that 6% of board members report that the ED has never received a performance evaluation. And here's a big discrepancy in the research was that 25% is a lot, big number of directors have say that they've never been evaluated from my research. So I also found from the research that 60% of boards report that the ED job description, the written job description, is reviewed on an annual basis, whereas only 30% of directors report the same. And then in response to when the written job description was last updated, only 2% of board members report never. Well, 18% of directors report never. It's interesting, I didn't put this on the slide, but 100% of board members reported that the ED did have a written job description, and 92% of EDs would agree with that. But a little bit of discrepancy. So there's discrepancies in the data, mostly I think because you all are volunteers. You all have full-time lives, full-time jobs mostly, and you're volunteering your discretionary time at the ministry, where the opposite is usually true of the executive director. This is, you know, a big portion of her life. So the data is clearer to her. But also you all have term limits. So sometimes the organizational history doesn't transfer when a new board member comes in. So you might not know that there was evaluations going on years before you got on board. So there's that could explain some of the discrepancies in the data. So the third hypothesis was that the board members are unaware of the processes of the ED, or for evaluating the ED. And I did find that 43% of board members consider an evaluation system, a calendar, or tool as their greatest need in the area of evaluating their executive leader. Okay, so that's a lot. So just for fun, I threw in a little fun thing. So we're going to move on with our roadmap. So someone just got it. Can you all read it? Can you read that in the back? Is it big enough? Okay. So where do we want to go? So we know where we are. And this was 2015, so it's still relevant data. And I think your show of hands probably proved that too. So where do we want to go? Well, we want to have healthy relationships with our executive directors. We want them to feel affirmed. We want them to be challenged. We want them to know what the board's expectations of them are. We want those expectations to match, which are a lot of the reasons why doing an evaluation on an annual basis is really important. It also helps to know that it helps to determine if the organization is on track with the mission and vision and goals of the organization. It helps to determine if the organizational It helps to determine if the organizational goals are being achieved. It also is an opportunity to review the executive director's compensation package, her salary and benefits, and to provide a merit increase if it's applicable and if it's if you're able to do that. And then lastly, and this is 25% of CareNet directors cited the need for encouragement, affirmation, and recognition as the most appreciated part of an evaluation. It strengthens and supports and develops the director. So there is a need to be doing evaluations. So how do we get there? If you're not there now, and some of you, it sounds like you are, so maybe this will be not new to you, or maybe it'll give you a fresh idea about how to do it in the future. So, oh, one more fun thing. Here is your annual performance review, Tina. I focused on your performance for the past 2 weeks because I don't remember anything further back. I was on vacation for the last 2 weeks. No time to chat. I need to spread some motivation over here. Sometimes I think directors feel that way, just from the comments that I have heard over the years. So next we're going to talk about the evaluation process. Right? Are my slides mixed up? I'm sorry, guys. I wonder when I picked them up if they got out of order. Okay, no, we're good. Okay, so how do we get there? Okay, and it starts really with a foundation of understanding board responsibilities and roles. You know, you are the governing bodies of your organizations. You have legal responsibilities as the governing body. You have fiduciary responsibilities. You are held accountable to the government, definitely to the IRS with your tax-exempt status. You're held accountable to your community, to your clients, and ultimately to God to govern well. So understanding those roles and responsibilities is foundational before you even start thinking about how to evaluate and what to evaluate in your executive director. So if you don't have a firm grasp on what those roles and responsibilities are, I know Yvonne and Saul are going to talk more about that later, and CareNet has some resources, but that's foundational. And maybe doing an audit of your board governance best practices to make sure you're doing things right. Understanding, you know, are you doing 990s every year? Are you doing them, completing them correctly? Are your HR practices according to federal laws? And just a quick PSA, I'm trying to do this wherever I go, the labor laws are changing in January. If you don't know about that, you need to know about that. They're changing the minimum required salary for an exempt employee. Right now, it's, I think, around $27,000, and they're moving it up to $48,000. So if you have an exempt executive director and she's making less than $48,000, January 1st, you will be out of compliance with the law. So we have information about that on our website. We did a webinar with an attorney a couple weeks ago, and it's on the affiliate website. You can talk to the folks at ECFA. They're upstairs outside the ballroom. Just an FYI to make sure you understand what's coming so that you are in compliance in January. So an audit, understanding what your role, what your responsibilities are as the governing body, and then audit of your best practices kind of is foundational to where you want to go with an evaluation. Okay, so the evaluation process, and we're going to run through this really quickly. It's all in the paper that you all have, and you're going to take that with you and look at it as you need to. But really, ideally, you start with a strategic plan. You start knowing where you are and where you want to go, even before you start thinking about what you're going to evaluate. Having a written job description, it sounds like most directors have something, but it might be outdated. It might be something she had when she was hired 5 or 10 years ago. So make sure that written job description is updated. I see this a lot with especially part-time directors. They have a full-time director's job description, and they work 20 hours a week. And there's no way anybody could do everything that's on that. And that's the board's expectation, and it's one person. So I always challenge directors to make sure their board knows what's on the job description so that they can have equal expectations. One more. I put a lot of time and thought into this employee evaluation. What did you say your name was again? All the bad things to do. So the most important step, you know, we're backing up, we're in the place where we're ready to start thinking about evaluating, is really preparing the executive for the evaluation. So you're not going to go back to the office or back to the center next week and walk into the director's office and say, you know, we're going to evaluate you today or next week or even next month. You're going to give her a plan of what the evaluation is going to look like. You're going to have an evaluation conversation, especially if you've never evaluated her. She's going to be a little nervous because most of you don't see what she does day to day. And that's something I hear from directors. They have no clue what I do day to day. And they expect me to do this, this, and this. If they only knew. And so they feel like they're being evaluated on a perception. And sometimes perception is reality, but sometimes it's not. So we want to get you and the director on the same page about performance expectations. And that's going to take a little bit of time. And we'll talk more about that. So you want to let her know that you are going to evaluate her. And we're going to have conversations going forward about what you will be evaluated on. And the who, the what, who will evaluate you, what you will be evaluated on, how we will evaluate you, when we're going to evaluate you, and the why, because we want to affirm you and we want to develop you and we want you to be the best leader that you can be. So getting her in that mindset, especially if you've never evaluated her, she's going to be probably a little shocked and then probably very, very happy that someone cares enough to take the time to do that. So, and the process could take months before you're actually ready to start the evaluation time period, because you're not going to evaluate her over the 2-week period. You want to give her at least a year of evaluation data. And so we're going to talk about what that looks like as far as setting goals for her. So she knows the evaluation's coming. And she needs to know what you're going to evaluate over that period of time. So you're going to sit with her and come up with performance goals that you would like your director to meet over the year. And it's important that they're objective. They're not vague or subjective. It's important that they're relevant, that they align with the mission and vision of your center. And it's important that they're measurable. So at the end of the year, you can see if the outcome happened or it didn't happen. So just some examples that I have that, you know, everybody has a different mission. But I would think most of our centers have a mission to reach and serve women at risk for abortion. So let's assume that that is most people in here's mission. So one target could be that you want the director to increase the number of abortion-minded women that visit the center by 10%. I'm just grabbing that out. That's a lot, but let's say 10%. So that's objective, it's relevant, and it's measurable. At the end of the year, you know what you started with, and at the end of the year, you can say if she's reached that goal. Another one might be that, you know, a lot of directors do development work, and the objective, that the goal you might have for them is that at the end of the year, they've increased the donor database by 5%. Again, relevant, objective, and measurable. And then last is a third example. Your center might have a sexual risk avoidance program, an abstinence program, where you go out in the community into schools and talk about sexual risk avoidance. So you might have a goal as to reach 500 students with your sexual risk avoidance message. Again, objective, relevant, and measurable. Now, let me clarify too that those would be goals that you would give your director, but your director can't do those alone. it would be her responsibility to have the staff, and that could be a discussion. Does she have the staff to meet these? She might say, you know, I can't increase that by 10%. I would have to have this, 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 and this. And unless the board was able to give her this, 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 and this, that might be a very unrealistic goal. So you have to make sure that the goals are realistic and that she has the support that she needs to reach those goals. Because she's not going to reach them necessarily on her own. She's going to reach them with the help of her staff. So, and how many goals should a director have over a year? If you give her too many, it's just going to be, you know, just too overwhelming. And if you give her too few, you're not really challenging her. And I should say her or him, because there are plenty of men serving as executive directors too. But so as a rule of thumb, I'd say between 5 and 10. And it's going to depend on your center and your director, and is she full-time, is she part-time, so forth. So can you see how that would be a discussion that you would have with her rather than just saying, you know, you're going to do this? She needs to give you feedback. You need to have a conversation about it, and then you both agree, yeah, this I can do, and we're going to hit this goal. And she knows that she is going to be evaluated on it, so she's going to be motivated to achieve it. There's also ways to evaluate her without using measurable goals. And I gave you an example in a handout. There's areas that you can think about evaluating that are on this handout. It's just a sample evaluation. But they're not as objective and measurable as the one I just gave you. But you want to know if she's in line with your vision, mission, and strategies, and her management objectives, her program management abilities, and so forth and so on. So you could include something like this. I smile at the first one. I had an experience this week at conference. One of the vendors was having people sign up for their, I can't remember who it was, but they're having centers sign up for their services or getting on their mailing list. So they were asking directors to write their name and write their mission statement. And more than half of the directors wrote, "I don't know."
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, ooh. Yeah. So I was like, ooh. That's not good. If your director doesn't know your mission statement, that's a big red flag. But that would be something that you could think about when you go back. So I'm going to go through this really quickly, but there are different ways that you can evaluate her and different evaluation methods. A survey like the one that I just showed you could be something that you could hand out to all the board members to use. Performance to annual plan assessment looks something like, and if you open your let me find the page. Hang on. I had it open. I got all disorganized. Let's find what page it's on. There we go. Yeah, page 16 of the handout I gave you. You can see what a performance to plan assessment would look like. Looks like this. Page 16 in your handout. So you would have the objectives and the goals that you would want for her. So using the examples I already gave you, increase the number of abortion-minded clients served at the center by 10%. The actual results, the outcome, were that there was no increase. So the rating would be she did not meet that objective. The second one, increase the donor database by 5%. The actual outcome was the donor base entries increased by 2%. But if you read in the notes, that she says that the lapsed donors, those who had not given in 5 years or more, were removed from the database, which affected the percentage. And if they hadn't been removed, it would have been increased by 10%. So we could say she met that objective. She raised $45,000 at the Walk for Life. She raised $62,000. The center raised $62,000, so she exceeded that one. So you can see what that would look like in a performance to plan assessment. And there's a zillion assessment tools on the internet. I purposely didn't give you one because it's not one size fits all. Just kind of look around and see what would work best for your center. I wanted to caution too about evaluating some of her soft skills or her leadership skills, to never go to her staff to ask those questions about her leadership, because that undermines her leadership. And it's disrespectful to her. But if you have a sense that something is not right, there's something afoot at the center, you might want to consider, and this is what we do at CareNet, we have a third party survey company, the Best Christian Workplace. They come in, they do a survey of all the employees, and they're able to gauge the climate at the center or at CareNet. And you could do something like that. And then that could be one of her objectives. And you'll see at the bottom of 16 that you want 95% of the center staff to complete the survey. And she had 100% complete, so it exceeded. But of those completing it, 80% or more report overall satisfaction. So 92% reported, so she exceeded it. But if you have an expectation that 80% of the staff are going to be satisfied and it comes in at 30 or 40%, that tells you something's amiss. And you would address that with the director and come up with a plan on how to improve that without having to go in and start asking questions to the staff. Does that make sense? Yes. It's Best Christian Workplaces Institute. I think it's bcwi.org, but you can Google them. They do an amazing job, and then they rank the organizations. And CareNet has ranked in the top 10% 3 years in a row now under Rollins' leadership, and it's been really good. Okay. You can also consider using a, now I got my handouts mixed up. You guys are going to think I'm the most disorganized person. Yes.
In the survey you did and so forth, did you ask where the center is in their evolution? Are they...
No, I didn't. I didn't go that deep into the survey. No.
Because I see a lot of this that you're talking about is worthy, but for our industry, it's not all that relevant. I mean, the fact is that our executive director is and was the founder of the organization, so she has more data than any other board members, and we're constantly trying to get more board members. And so to have a board with less, what should I say, experience or relevancy than trying to evaluate the founder and the executive director, that's a miss, you know?
Yeah, well, I understand where you're at, and I understand that boards are at different places in their evolution, but what you want to eventually get to is to a place where you are not involved on the day-to-day workings of the center, but that you're in a governing position, and it does take a more mature board, and, you know, that's what you can aspire to get to. And I understand the founding director feels a lot of ownership, but she is still a direct employee of the board of directors and needs to be accountable to the board. It's just the way that the organization and the corporation is formed. It's just a matter of record that that's what it should be. So eventually that's where it needs to be. I hope that's helpful.
What's the timeline for that eventuality?
Well, I think knowledge is power. And so you're going to take knowledge back to the rest of the board and maybe challenge that this is somewhere we need to go. And you're going to probably get pushback from the director. I don't know. Maybe not. She might be thrilled that somebody is going to take the time and evaluate her performance. And I would guess that most directors want engaged boards. They're interested in what's going on and know as much, or, you know, almost as much as what she knows. It's a lonely position to be an executive director. And, you know, sometimes you feel like you're flying by the seat of your pants. And like kids that want boundaries and parents to tell them, you know, they're doing a good job, I think directors do too. So it's accountability for them as well. And that's your role as a board.
Then you would probably have to update the bylaws.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's another good point with the audit of your best practices, and make sure you're in compliance with your bylaws. If your bylaws, you know, call for term limits and you've been on the board for 25 years, you're in violation of your bylaws, and the IRS doesn't think too highly of that. So make sure that you look at your bylaws. Okay? All right, so good question, though. Thank you. So we talked about the methods. Okay, we need a break here. I finished your performance review. Terrific. It's 9 months late, and all you did was sign what I wrote. I think I also read it, but I'm not 100% positive. Oh, ouch. So. Yeah, and I'm gonna get there. That's up on one of the next slides. So good question. Thanks. Okay, so next we're going to talk about monitoring the information that we've already decided that you're going to be collecting. Oh, here we go. Okay, I found it. So you're gonna need to know on an ongoing basis. If you're not going to wait till the end of the year to collect the data. So you're going to collect the data from her probably at your monthly board meeting. She's going to give reports about how they're doing, what's the client load look like, you know, what's the database, whatever you've decided are your goals, and she'll be reporting about that. So it'll be regularly reporting of the right data on an ongoing basis, and you could be giving feedback at board meetings, giving her suggestions, helping her to achieve her goals. And then preparing the evaluation, this kind of goes to your question. It does need to be a collective opinion of the board. It's not just the board chair's responsibility to collect the data and then to prepare the evaluation and to give the evaluation. You know, you operate as a board, as a whole. One board member doesn't make the board, so the whole board needs to be in consensus about what you're going to say and do about the evaluation. So it would probably take a special board session or two for you to sit down, look at the information that you've collected. You could collect a self-evaluation from the director where she's evaluating herself, and that helps gauge the direction. You can do the surveys for all the board. You bring them together. You talk about what you said, what she said, and then try to come to consensus on what you're going to deliver to the board so that there is I can never say that word. You're unanimous. Yeah. And you prepare the evaluation in writing. Yeah, and we're going to talk about that next. Good. One more. So how are you doing on your unspoken objectives? My what? I'm referring to the goals I have in my mind that I've never mentioned. How are those going? Oh, I'm totally nailing them. So now we're going to talk about delivering it. So it does need to be in writing. It does need to be on paper. It does need to have the objective goals, whether she met or didn't, he or she met or didn't meet them. And it should have some narrative about your expectations, what she's doing well, what she needs to improve on, and that would be really helpful. So we talked that it needs to be from the entire board, but it has to be timely as well. And we do our evaluations at CareNet. We have a fiscal year that starts July 1st. I think most centers start their fiscal year January. Anybody do a July fiscal year? Just a few. So the evaluation should come pretty close after your fiscal year ends and all the data is collected. If your fiscal year ends December 31st, I would say sometime in January, beginning of February at the latest, that you need to be giving the evaluation. So it can't be too far out after the time of evaluation ends. And it's usually given by the key stakeholders, and that's the board, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the whole board has to sit down with the director. In fact, I would probably recommend against that because she might feel like she's being ganged up on. A lot of centers have a committee, an HR committee that might do it, or if it's just the board chair, that's fine too. So whatever works for your center, make it a conversational thing, and so you don't feel like you're sitting across the table and she's being interviewed by five people. That would be a little intimidating. I'd like to suggest that you have the written evaluation, the actual hard copy, that you would give it to her maybe an hour or even half a day before the evaluation so she has time to read it and process it and kind of sink in what you've said. And then when the actual evaluation takes place, you can verbally give her the evaluation and she can ask questions about it. You need to do it in a confidential locale. That seems obvious, but, you know, Starbucks is not confidential. Even the pregnancy center might not be confidential unless you did it like after hours and you know that nobody else is going to be coming in to the center. So just, you know, choose wisely on where. Again, it's written or verbal, conversational. Let her read it beforehand. And try to give very candid feedback that will help the organization grow and help develop her personally and professionally. So constructive criticism in areas of deficiency and loaded with lots and lots of appreciation for what she's doing. I read that one expert says not recognizing an employee for their accomplishments can be considered worker theft. And I think that's probably true. And then let's talk about the elephant in the room. Sometimes even if I stand in the middle of the room, no one acknowledges me. And it's compensation. I've talked to directors who their boards never bring it up and they're too timid to ask about it. And, you know, we're nonprofits and sometimes we're on shoestring budgets and it's like, oh, you know, they just can't afford it. But if you don't talk about it, you're going to come up with all kinds of other reasons that you're not giving me a raise. So even if you can't afford to give her a merit increase, tell her that. Tell her that that's the reason. So talk about it. And if you can afford it, if you can afford it, then compensate her accordingly. I had a director in my workshop yesterday when I told about the new labor laws going up to $48,000. She came up to me afterwards and she was horrified. She said, I'm going to go back and tell my board and they're just going to fall apart. That we can't afford $48,000. What are CareNet centers going to do? Are we going to have to become consultants, contract employees? And I said, listen, $48,000 is a pittance for what you deserve. If a board can't raise $48,000 to honor you as the executive director of a life-affirming ministry, that says a lot about the board. God owns a cattle on a thousand hills. You don't think he can raise $48,000 for an executive director? It might take some work. It might take some fundraising and development and getting the need out. But by golly, God can do that. So I'm saying that because, well, I got a group of board members to say it to. Compensate your directors according to the merit that they deserve and honor them with that. A lot of them, I can't believe some of the salaries that they accept. Yes.
Well, just remember, you don't have to pay that. That's for overtime.
Right.
So you pay them less. They just need to ask for 40 hours of overtime.
Yeah.
And it actually affects them.
Oh, is it December 1st? Okay. Well, she corrects. Thank you. Yeah. But anyway, just a word, you know, to encourage you to really think highly in that area for your directors. The follow-up and the documentation, give her time to process the evaluation, especially if it, you know, has some things that she needs to develop. You're going to have her sign the paper. If she needs a day to sign it, give her that day because she'll have room to write her comments. And if she needs a day or two, that's fine. And she would give it back to the board. You could schedule a follow-up meeting and talk more if that's needed. And then she'll sign it, give it back, and it becomes an official record of the evaluation that would go in her HR file. And it's signed and filed. And it would include, again, her list of accomplishments, the things that you appreciate about her, her unmet goals and an explanation, recommendations for improvement, and comments for the executive director. So I apologize on your handout that these are so tiny you can barely read it, but it's kind of an evaluation cycle that you need to get into where it's a yearly thing, it's on the calendar. You know that you're going to evaluate her in January, so you need to start getting ready in November or even before that if, you know, the holidays are in the way. It's on the calendar, you know, January 15th, and once you've evaluated her, you have to almost immediately turn around and decide what goals you're going to set for the coming year. So there's not a lot of wiggle room in between things. So it's just a cycle that you have to get used to. Someone had a question? Okay, no. Yes. Yes. Yeah, we have a salary survey that's available on our website, and it's a joint project we did with Heartbeat International, and we do it every other year, so we have one from 2015 that's the most current, and we'll be doing another one in January of 17. So it's on the affiliate side of the website, yeah, and it gives salaries for all different size of boards, size of budgets, locations, and different positions. So that's, I'm glad you mentioned that because I meant to.